Good morning. Welcome to another episode of Quest Youth Radio, which is the best youth radio. I want to say good morning to everyone, and most importantly, our student host and our panelist, Mr. Shelton Harris and the real deal. Yeah, that's right, Justin Hill. But before we go into our introductions and good mornings, I'd like to say music is like poetry and has a message, and history, like a diamond, shines clear to the truth. You see, words have meanings that we can comprehend like definitions. And news can show us a chain of events that we may not always understand. I'm asking each and every one of you to pull back our musical curtain to see and hear the contributions of our diaspora. And you're sure to find our Quest moment where we attempt to make waves, indeed vibrations. So thank you once again for joining us to hear a different perspective of our community. Now, today we welcome you to another edition of Quest Youth Radio, once known as Quest Community Vibrations, featuring our student host, Justin Hill. Before we bring on our student host, I'd like to say good morning to Mr. Shelton Harris. Good morning, Shelton.
Good morning. Bright moments.
All right. And without any further ado, I'd like to hand it over to Justin Hill, our student host. Good morning, Justin.
Good morning, everybody.
Okay, so Justin, I know that you prepared several segments for today, and I'd like for you to begin and just lay it on us.
Okay. History is like a diamond. Each prism represents the work of a group of people at a particular period of time. Look into the diamond and see the reflections of your past self, the pain of your mother, the choice of your father and the blood of your ancestors. Look deeply and you are bound to find yourself. And my first Dhamma segment of today is on Toni Morrison. Toni Morrison was an American novelist. Her first novel, The Bull's Eye, was published in 1970. In 1988, Morrison won the Pulitzer Prize for Beloved. Also, she was awarded Nobel Prize in Literature in 1993. Born and raised in Lorain, Ohio, Morrison graduated from Howard University in 1953 with a BA in English. She earned a master's degree in American Literature from Cornell University in 1955. She was honored with the National Book Foundation's Medal of Distinguished Contribution to American Letters the same year. President Barack Obama presented her with the Presidential Medal of Freedom on May 29, 2012. I chose Toni Morrison today because she was a very good person during her career. She has also gotten many medals and awards. And that is it for my segment of Toni Morrison. And I thank you guys for listening.
Okay. Now, Mr. Harris, I want to come to you. Do you have any comment about Toni Morrison and her work and achievements?
Well, yes. First, let me say Justin did a nice job on bringing up a lot of the stuff that she's done in her life and how important she was as far as a writer. But today they have this thing called critical race theory. They feel like her books are too damaging to young minds and stuff now. So they've taken her book out of regular school and even on the college level, because her books talk about what's really going on between our community, you know, with the racism, and she talked about slavery going beloved, and, you know, all of these things like that. They kind of, you know, the dominant society is trying to block those kind of understandings of what actually went on in American history. And she was a very good proponent of bringing these type of things to light. And they're banning her books, taking her books out of libraries all over the country. And it's sad that it had to come to that, because she really stood for what she wanted to do for a very long time. And that's really all I wanted to say about Toni at this time. Or Miss Morrison.
Yeah, well, Toni Morrison. Oh, yeah. Well, Toni Morrison, I'm not certain if she was related to Maya Angelou or not, but I know that they were close. Which definitely would extend to James Baldwin as well, being a outspoken person to understand what was going on in the diaspora and what was being laid down by the quote-unquote society in charge, or the people supposedly in charge of society, I need to just say white supremacy, and the racism. Mr. Harris, you said what?
No, I was just confirming what you were saying. You know, I was kind of almost beating around the bush myself. But sometimes we have to be straight with what we're talking about so people can understand where we're coming from.
Right.
And it is racism, white supremacy.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, when you talked about, and I'm responding to your comment, and Justin, I trust that you're taking notes on this, right? A mental note, if nothing else, that for her books to be banned, first of all, let's talk about where this type of thing is going on. You have black people that don't know what critical race theory is, and it's a farce. In other words, it's a scam. There's no such thing as critical race theory. In my mind.
No, well, not in regular school. Not in regular school. This is a graduate level course that kind of talks about this. You know, this is what people going for their PhDs and stuff like this. But what they're doing, they're eliminating the books and stuff that lean or talk about that in elementary schools. You know, so what they want to do, they want to take everything bad that white people have done to black people out of our history classes and out of our language arts classes, you know, because their rationale was that it was going to make our little white kids feel bad about their grandparents that did all these terrible things to black people. And because we're not in charge of our schools in our communities, we let people outside of our community dictate what curriculum and stuff is being done within our community. And that's a major problem. And this critical race theory is really pushing it all the way to the nth degree. Like, we don't even want you to learn about yourself. We don't want you to learn about your past in this country. And everything we did, we're going to try to, excuse the pun, but whitewash it and make it look like everything has been wonderful all through history. And I don't know why you black people are so upset. And, you know, and this is just another way of using white supremacy into developing young minds. See, that's where I have a problem with it. You know, you're brainwashing kids at 5 to 18 years old to thinking that everything has always been wonderful here, and it has not.
Yeah, well, you know. The question I will always ask is, can a flower grow through cement? And the answer is yes.
Yeah.
And it, you know, once there is any kind of crack, and what does that mean, Justin? A flower can a flower grow through cement? What that means is certain things in nature cannot be stopped. And the truth, you know, is the light, and the light cannot be stopped, and the truth can't be stopped. And so while we have certain politicians in certain states that are trying to making real successful attempts at removing books from shelves in libraries, places like Florida, and I'll name them. Right off the top of my mind, Florida, Georgia, Texas, states, you know, with that type of thinking, you know, it will be inevitable that the truth will come to light, and this will, too, come to pass. But, you know, the other thing here is these are politicians that are actually doing this, and anytime you have a politician involved in scholastic aptitude, or scholastic decisions being made on a scholarly level, there's a problem there. You know, and the problem stems from systematic racism, which is still aligned in the government. The governmental policies officials. So there have been people elected, right, by people in their particular states that are advocating for the removal of certain types of books to eliminate black history. Mr. Harris, did I veer off or go too far?
Now, well, you can't go too far. But part of the whole deal is that if we don't understand, because you brought up Texas, we don't understand that most of the books that are written for all over the country are written in Texas. You know, and a lot of the things that Texas believes that it's not important for to be a part of our history they're going to eliminate that from the thing, because Texas even had some stuff where they were saying that there was no such thing as unhappy slaves. You know, slaves were happy. And if it wasn't for the good white people to come get them out of their savagery they had in Africa, you know, we're in a better place because of slavery. And, you know, and only a devil would say that. But I don't want to go that far. But sometimes that's
okay.
What it is.
Well, I'll help you out here, you know, and just so Justin can understand, it goes to the tale of two wolves. Whatever you're feeding the wolf is what you're going to get. All right. And so this is the tale of a wolf that has been fed a lot of negative things and not positive and definitely not the truth. Right. And right now we're going to go to music. And we're going to come back. And Justin, do you want to make any comment from what we just talked about?
No.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to play a song titled, guess what? The Light.
This queen, I ain't seen you in a minute. Wrote this letter and finally decide to send it. Signed, sealed, delivered for us to grow together. Love has no limit, let's spin a slow forever. I know your heart is weathered by what does did to you. I ain't gon' start 'em cause I probably did it too. Because of you feelings I handle with care. Some recognize your life but they can't handle the glare. You know I ain't the type to walk around with matching shirts. The relationship is effort, I will match your work. I wanna be the one to make you happiest and hurt you the most. They say the end is near, it's important that we're close to the most high. Regardless of what happened, on him let's rely. Second, it's important we communicate and tune the fate of this union to the right pitch. I never call you my to even my boo. There's so much in the name and so much more in you. Few understand the union of woman and man. And sex and a single is where they assuming it land. But that's fly by night for you in the sky right. During these cold shy nights, moon, you my light. If heaven had a height, you would be that tall. Ghetto to coffee shop, you, I see that all. Let's stick to understanding and we won't fall. For better or worse times, I hope to me you call. So I pray every day more than anything. Friends will stay as we begin to lay this foundation for a family. Love ain't simple, why can't it be anything worth having you work at annually? Granted, we've known each other for some time. It don't take a whole day to recognize sunshine. It's kinda fresh you listen to more than hip-hop. And I can catch you in the mix from beauty to thrift shop. Plus you shit pop when it's time to. Thinking you fresh, suggesting beats I should rhyme to. At times when I'm lost I try to find you. You know to give me space when it's time to. My heart's dictionary defines you. It's love and happiness. Truthfully it's hard trying to practice abstinence. The time we committed love it was real good. Had to be for me to arrive and it still feel good. I know the sex ain't gon' keep you, but as my equal it's how I must treat you. As my reflection the light I'ma lead you. And whatever's right I'ma feed you. Yo I tell you the rest when I see you. Peace.
Yeah. Just as important as Black history, so is women's history. And in the history of America, we have gone through a multitude of different changes and evolution. And as we evolve, we change, and hopefully always for the better. And the struggle still continues, and so does the fight. And that being said, I'd like to hand it back over to our student host, Justin Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Bay. And now is time for my segment of definitions. This segment provides the listener with words and the meanings that we can achieve together, a common basis to say we can and we believe in ourselves. Remember, whosoever controls our definitions controls us. You must define existence and I'll have defined for us. And my definition segment is on the word novelist. A novelist is a writer of novels. Also, a novel is a piece of long narrative and literary prose. Narrative prose is meant to entertain and tell a story. And that is it for my segment of definitions.
Okay. Now, I have to ask you, because this relates to Toni Morrison, what type of history do you think Toni Morrison had and that motivated her? What type of stories do you think she wrote about?
I think she wrote novels.
About what, though? Where do you think she got her experience? What do you think was going through her mind? What did she draw off of, right? What did she drink from in order to come up with the novels? Where did her knowledge come from? What do you think she wrote about?
I don't know.
Okay, so was she Black?
Yes.
So what do you think she wrote about? She wrote about the Black experience. She wrote about the Black experience, the Black conditions in which Black people had to live through. Got it?
Yes.
You know, so what do you think were the types of conditions that she looked at?
How Black people were treated.
Exactly. I'm glad you said that because of slavery. Let me stop right there. The word slavery is a misconception. The word slavery does not give us a good viewpoint where we can have an image in our mind. Some people will have you think that slavery wasn't all that bad. But slavery, the term, is a misnomer. The word misnomer is misinformed. Slavery does not define what Black people had to endure and the adversity that they had to overcome. You know, some of the things that the conditions that Black people had to go through and live through were horrendous, were terrible, Justin, terrible. I mean, they were so bad that I'm afraid to kind of mention them. So a novelist, a writer, has to pull upon themselves. They have to look into themselves. They have to look into history in order to bring words to life, to write them down on the page. And they always have to draw from their own experiences or the experiences of their people. and from where they come from. Mr. Harris, I want you to jump in here with a comment or anything that you want to add. Okay, so maybe Mr. Harris has accidentally muted himself from the conversation, but we'll bring him back in.
And that's exactly right? What I did. That's exactly what I did. I muted myself.
Right. So, yeah, would you like to make a comment to coattail to where I just left off?
Yeah, well, as far as Toni Morrison, you know, as far as anybody, if you're going to write about something, there's two reasons why you do it. Either you write about it because you're interested in something or something that you've actually experienced. And she was interested in her experiences during slavery. And it was very important that she wrote this stuff down. It doesn't necessarily have to be true. It just has to be her ideas about what's going on. That's the difference between being a novelist and writing somebody who's writing something that's nonfiction. Fiction means it's made up, or it could have been made up, even though it's based on certain truths. But she was more of a novelist because sometimes you can catch a person's attention better with a novel. Because sometimes just telling them the straight truth, a lot of people don't want to hear that, you know, because it's very hard sometimes. And she was very good at, you know, I don't want to say beating around the bush, but like not being as direct with her prose as she would normally do. And it's important that she was able to do that. You know, I feel very, very glad. I have read most of her books, not all of them. But I've read most of them, and she was very deep in what she was trying to do. And the fact that, like I said earlier, they're trying to ban her book is a travesty.
Okay.
I don't know if I
answered
the question. But
no, it wasn't a question. It was I just asked you, you know, to make a comment, and you know, you did a great job. You know, but Justin, if you have black coffee, right, and you add cream to it, it lightens up. But it's still black coffee. I don't know if you understood
that,
Justin.
Yeah, but if you put too much cream, you might not recognize it. You can't put too much cream because you'll never recognize it with coffee.
Right. Yeah. And that's what they're trying to do with critical race theory, Justin. It starts out as black history, but if you keep on pouring cream in it, you won't be able to identify that as black coffee. But it's still black coffee. Anyway, right now we're going to musically continue. This song is titled The Message.
Forever.
All right. The message. And together as we go. Justin, before I hand it over to you, I just want to, you know, bring to your attention, not only are you the youngest person in the room, as I figuratively describe it, but, you know, between Mr. Harris and myself, well, let's just say that we have a 50-year advantage of information on you, right? So we're always looking to push you, Justin. We're always looking for you to join our discussion. And we are aware that we do have a 50-year advantage, but there is an expectation for us together to find the answers to help boost you up so that you can contribute to the best of your ability to the comments and the conversation about the different topics that you cover from week to week. Did I say that correctly, Mr. Harris? And would you like to add anything to that?
Sounds good. No, yeah, well, that's basically what this podcast is about. And I'm glad you only said 50 years.
You hear that, Justin? It might be more. You got a couple of old heads, you know, backing you up, brother. So you can't go wrong, right? And that being said, I want to hold it. I want to hand it back to you. Ladies and gentlemen, the real deal, Jay the Justin Hill. Go ahead. Take it away, man.
Okay. My next segment is on Miley Evans Williams. History is like a diamond. Each prism represents the work of a group of people at a particular period of time. Look into the diamond and see the reflections of your past self, the pain of your mother, the choice of your father, and the blood of your ancestors. Look deeply and you're bound to find yourself. A leading civil rights activist, Miley Evans Williams, held prominent roles in the public and private sector, including chair of NAACP's Board of Directors from 1995 to 1998. Determined to make positive changes in that society, both Medgar and Miley opened and managed the first NAACP Mississippi State Office. They lived under constant threats as they worked for voting rights, economic stability, fair housing, equal education, equal justice, and dignity. After several attempts on his life, Medgar Evers was shot and killed after coming home from work in June 1963. The KKK member who killed him, Brian DeLa Beckwith, was tried twice, but both all-white juries deadlocked on his guilt. Evers Williams would finally see justice for her husband's murder 3 decades later when DeLa Beckwith was found guilty and sent to prison when he was in his 70s. That is it for my segment of Diamonds, and I chose this woman because she stood up for her husband's murder, and she didn't give up without a fight. And that is it for my segment of Diamonds, and I will be back with my next segment of Definitions.
Okay, that's cool. I want to add that Medgar Evers, it took more than 3 decades, like you said, Justin, but justice was finally served in 1963 with the murder of a pioneering civil rights activist, Medgar Evers. This happened in Jackson, Mississippi, and about half past midnight, a shot rang out, and it was June 12th. In a suburban neighborhood in Jackson, Mississippi. The 37-year-old civil rights activist named Mega Evers had just come home after a NAACP meeting. And as he began to his short walk up to the single-story, a bullet struck Evers in the back. And he staggered up the stairs to his house and then collapsed. Across the street on a lightly wooded hill, another man jumped up in pain. The recoil of the Enfield rifle he had just fired drove the scope into his eye, badly bruising him, and he dropped the weapon and fled. So that means that the man who shot Mega Evers bruised himself, but he left the rifle. And you have to know that they were fingerprints. And you have to ask, why did it take 30 years? And why did it take more than just one trial to convict this guy? And because of the white supremacy, the racism that existed in the state of Mississippi, right, during that particular time. And I might add in, even to this day, Mississippi still suffers from more than just the after effects of racism, but Jim Crow is alive and well, still to this day in Mississippi. And this being Women's History Month, we advocate for women who have stood by the sides of men. You know, it's 100%. In other words, it's not 50-50, it's 100%. It takes both men and women to make change. And Miley Evers is an example. After 57 years of advocating in behalf of her husband for justice, she advocated for the rights of black people, like you mentioned, all over this country, delivering the message to never give up, like you said, Justin. Mr. Harris, I want to bring you in.
Like you said, even though we speak about people after something tragic happens to them, these are everyday occurrences. Excuse me. And this is something, especially from Mississippi, because, matter of fact, my father was from Mississippi. And around the same, you know, a little bit earlier than this time frame we're talking about, which was even worse than it was when Mega Evers was standing up and doing stuff. And, you know, and they couldn't get out of Mississippi quick enough to come to New Jersey. You know, and it was, and there's a lot of stuff, and like you were saying, Mr. Bay, that things really haven't changed much in Mississippi. They still hold the same ideas, the same attitudes that they've had before, and it just gets translated from one generation to the next. And because they never really got over the fact that black people aren't slaves anymore. And they get to stand up and do stuff and are doing it a lot better than a lot of people were. And that just pissed them off so much so that they would go through and just try to tear your stuff up just for the heck of it. And, you know, and I don't want to make it sound like we just talking about Mississippi. We ain't just talking about Mississippi. We're talking about all across this country. People think all the racism was just in the South. But there was a different type of racism in the North. You know, they just had a different way of looking at it, but you were still stopped from joining stuff and doing things, getting in unions and stuff like that. But, I'm going to stop right there because I can keep going.
Well, that's quite all right. That's quite all right. Mr. Harris, why I still have you on the line, we opened up with a Night in Tunisia, a jazz cut. Were you able to hear that cut? And are you able to give us any kind of background information on that particular artist, the song that I played to open up the show?
Yeah, that was John Burks Gillespie, better known as Dizzy, and Charlie Parker was on the tenor sax. And, you know, and it was one of the songs that they've done. They collaborated on a lot of stuff that set a new trend in music from what people thought, what they used to call jazz, and they took jazz to another level called bebop. And, you know, and they just moved the music from one level to the next. And those were two giants, Dizzy Gillespie and Charlie Parker. If you've never heard of them before, you need to check them out.
Okay. All right. And then I transitioned into a song by Common, right? Common is a hip-hop artist, a rapper, actor, performer. You have any comments or words that you can say about him?
Well, Common is, you know, that's really his name is kind of a misnomer because he's very uncommon, you know, because he's a conscious rapper. You know, he usually talks about things that are positive on, you know, when it comes to talking about his people, and he just uses rap as his vehicle. And, you know, and he's been on the scene for a long time, but because a lot of people aren't really privy to him, people know him more as an actor than they do as a rapper. And, you know, that part is sad because he really has a lot to say.
Absolutely. You know, I don't know if I told you guys or not, but I had the opportunity last month to see him in a Broadway play titled Between Riverside and Crazy. Right. And he did a very good job. And, you know, that just is a testament to his talent and ability as an artist and not just a rapper. And you're right. A lot of people don't see him as a rapper, but he was able to parlay his rapping ability into becoming an actor and performer, an artist, and well known. As we continue, right, musically, let me see what I can come up with here, right? Give something for Mr. Harris to expound on a little bit later on, right? Let's see here. Ah, here we go. The Sounds of Chic. How about it? Okay, we're going to come back with the Sounds of Chic in just a moment. But right now, we want to continue because that brought to my attention being right on time with 6 minutes and 40-something seconds left. Right, I want to bring our student host back on. For your, I think it's your last segment, right?
Yes.
Take it away.
Okay. My segment, this is my last segment today, and long after the Mississippi justice system gave up on the murder prosecution, Miley Evers kept the case alive. Even before her husband's 1963 assassination, Miley Evers had struggled with the consequences of her husband's attempts to overturn Jim Crow segregation. On the night of June 12, 1963, the dreaded happened. Shots rang out in the front of the Evers home. As the kids crawled on the floor to a bedroom, Miley went to the front door. Edgar, who was lying there in a pool of blood, crying from a shot Over the years, she ran for Congress, remarried, and left Mississippi. But whenever she came back, she asked what had happened, what had been done to put Beckwith behind bars and press officials to keep looking for new evidence. And that is, and my last email today is on definitions, and that is on equal justice. Equality before the law when all people have the same rights and when no one is treated differently. And that is it for my segments of today, and I thank you guys for listening.
Okay. Mr. Harris, I'm going to let you ask Justin this next question. Or go right ahead, Mr. Harris.
Because I was wondering when you was talking about equal rights. What was this pertaining to, and are there any other examples that you can talk about where a person wasn't afforded their equal right in a particular situation other than Merle Evers for her husband, Megan?
Well, first, I just want to say I chose equal rights because Merle Evers wanted equal rights for her husband's murder. And another example is Osan Sweet. He lived in a white neighborhood, and his family got attacked, and he fought back, and then he had to go to court.
Yeah, that's a good example also. You know, I was thinking about Coretta Scott King, who, you know that eventually the United States government admitted that it was the FBI that actually killed him and not James L. Ray. And she had to wait, again, like Merle Evers, she had to wait like 30, 40 years before they actually made that commitment, say that, yeah, they did that. It was the same thing with Betty Shabazz. It was, the government finally admitted that, yeah, it wasn't the Nation of Islam. We were the ones that killed Malcolm X. You know, and it's a lot of things that go on within our community that, you know, they'll wait like a whole generation, let the people who actually did the dirt live their lives out, and then they'll come back and say, yeah, well, you know, we made a mistake, and, you know, this person really did it, you know, but either like when it came to Della Beckwith, he was in his 70s, but when he did it, he was in his 40s. And had he went to jail in his 40s for the same length of time, it would have been a major difference within his life. But he got to live his life out. And this is what happens to a lot of people in our community who are victims of this non-equal right. And, you know, things don't become a law unless people are breaking it to start with. If everybody was dealing with people equally, we wouldn't need a law that says that, you know, you have to treat people equally. You know, people have been getting away with it for years. And, you know, I just wanted to bring that to your attention. But, yeah, but the person you brought up with was another good example on how racism is used within our system. And it's embedded in our system.
Okay. Justin, give us a behind the mic of today's show. Right, and thank you, Mr. Harris, for your input and comments and suggestions. Take it away for a behind the mic. Give us a summation of today's broadcast.
Okay. Well, first, today I talked about Toni Morrison. Toni Morrison was an American novelist, and she wrote her first novel called The Bluest Eye in 1970. She won the Nobel Prize in Literature in 1993. And my next segment was on the word novelist. Now, novelist is the writer of novels. My next segment was on Merle Evers Williams. Merle Evers Williams was a civil rights activist, and she stood up for her husband's murder. And my definition for it was on equal justice. And equal justice is basically where the law, where we have equal rights and no one is treated differently. And my last segment of today was on how Miley Evers Williams never gave up for her husband's murder. And that is it for today. Make sure you check out our next show from 7 to 8 a.m. next Saturday on 89.5 FM. Quest Youth Radio is the best youth
radio. Great job. And now it's time for our last song, Soup for One, by Cheek.